Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 255. Greta, what's up?
Hey, hey. Not a whole lot. What's up with you?
Not too much.
All right.
On this episode, we're exploring Tolkien's famous and controversial proclamation that Lord of the Rings is fundamentally religious and Catholic. Just what did he mean by that? How much does it matter for deepening our appreciation of Lord of the Rings and of Middle-earth? Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Ready, Greta?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
Whoopsh!
Boom.
Nice.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Andrew T., John R., and Ms. Anonymous.
Thanks,
and a shout out to our newest patron, Matthew.
Matthew, welcome.
Welcome,
Thank
Matthew.
You.
Thank you. Please support the Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks. Don't forget, you can now make an annual pledge and get 1 month free. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on.
Indeed.
And it's time for the weekly Tolkien Road YouTube Air 5 for all those watching us on YouTube. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsh! Boom.
Nice.
You too can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Just head on over to YouTube where this episode is posted. And while you're at it, subscribe and click the notify bell to be part of what we're doing over there. Also, make sure to check out the rest of our video library on YouTube, which is already large and growing weekly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, in episode 254, we took a close look at the religion of Numenor and discussed what it means in terms of understanding the purpose of Numenor's existence. For those of you who've been longtime listeners, you know that we don't shy away from this topic on this podcast, right? That the topic of not only the religion of Numenor, right, and maybe related questions within the Middle-earth legendarium, we tackle those. But we also look at the broader issue of, like, what role it played on a much deeper level in Tolkien's own life and how that might have worked itself out into these various works. So in this episode, we're going to consider just what Tolkien meant when he claimed that Lord of the Rings is fundamentally religious and Catholic. All right? A lot of y'all probably know that saying. What did he mean by that? We'll start off by considering the context of Tolkien's words. And I'll go ahead and say that this is going to be kind of a two-parter episode. So on this episode, we're going to consider the words themselves and the context that they come from. And then we're going to kind of develop a thesis from that and then talk about the evidence for that thesis later on. All right. So, and I just want to encourage everybody. I know many of you listening to this podcast, when we've talked about this subject before, many of you like really enjoy it and seem to like it when we cover issues like this on the podcast. Some of you we get negative reactions from, but the more I bring this topic up and the more I get actual negative reactions from people, when I interact with them, with the people who respond negatively and explain where we're coming from, and that I often find that they're incorrect in their assumptions about where we're coming from on this topic. And what ends up happening is we often have very interesting conversations as a result. Doesn't mean we necessarily agree on everything, but it means that we're able to actually have an educational and productive conversation, and really, in my opinion, a very enjoyable conversation. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that even for those of you who may not particularly like this topic, or you know, maybe you have a strong opinion against religion or against Catholicism in particular, or just Christianity in particular, that you just bear with us and listen up to what we say, because if you're here, you love Tolkien already. And I think this is something that matters if you love Tolkien, regardless. You should want to understand where he's coming from. That sound good to you, Greta?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will even take it one step further and say that it could very well, with, you know, having an open mind about these things, if you don't already, could very well serve to enhance your enjoyment of Tolkien's works and just kind of understand them better and just, you know, get a more expansive or complete appreciation for what he's done.
I think that word appreciation is key that you just threw in there, right? We think of appreciation as being like, boy, I really appreciate that, right? You know, that was a nice thing to do, or like, you know, in response to somebody doing something nice for you or something like that. But you can also, like, appreciation is also like appreciating like a fine wine, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some training that has to go into that. I know, because I'm not very good at that. I'm just kind of like, tastes good to me. But I'm really impressed with people who can like take a fine wine and, you know, talk about all of the things that make it so fine. Mm-hmm. And so that same thing applies to appreciating literature and works of art, right? There are things that I was unable to appreciate when I was much younger and didn't understand certain things. And as I learn more, I'm able to appreciate things more, right? As I learn more about that specific topic. So that note of appreciation is key. Even if you still want nothing to do with, you know, religion or Catholicism after this, it's not really the point. Like, that's not what we're trying to do with this, right? We're trying to help you appreciate the legendary Middle Earth Tolkien's mind more. That's what we're about here. So, so hopefully, again, just going to start some more good conversations and continue some other ones. So, all right. So we'll start off in considering this question. We'll start off by considering the context of Tolkien's words. So this quote comes from letter 142 in the Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, which is one of my favorite of Tolkien's books. And it's a letter from December of 1953. He's replying to a letter from a Jesuit priest, actually. So a Jesuit priest. Jesuits are an order of... it's a religious order within the Catholic Church, right? So otherwise known as the Society of Jesus, founded in the late 16th century by Ignatius of Loyola. And it's been a very... There's been a lot of Jesuits in the history of the church, right? And so he's speaking to a Jesuit priest here, Father Robert Murray. They had been friends, it would seem, for many years. I'm actually going to link to an obituary for Father Robert Murray from the Tablet, which is a UK website, and he was a pretty interesting guy, right? Mm-hmm. It's behind a paywall, but you can actually register for free to read this article, and you don't have to pay anything. So all you have to do is basically give him your email if you want to read this article. So I'd highly encourage you to go check that out and just know a little bit more about who he's talking to over here, because I did not know much about this individual until I read his obituary, and he's a very interesting individual. One note from the obituary: his friendship with the Tolkien family is also said to have contributed to his conversion. So Father Robert Murray was actually a convert to Catholicism himself. And then after he converted, he went on to become a member of the Society of Jesus and then became a priest eventually. Wow. And so just a very, very interesting guy, and apparently had known Tolkien since he was pretty young, and was friends with him. I'm going to read the bio from the volume of letters, which is pretty short, and it's not really a bio. It just gives a little bit of context. Father Robert Murray, grandson of Sir James Murray, and a close friend of the Tolkien family, had read part of The Lord of the Rings in galley proofs and typescripts, and had, at Tolkien's instigation, sent comments and criticism. He wrote that the book left him with a strong sense of a positive compatibility with the Order of Grace, and compared the image of Galadriel to that of the Virgin Mary. He doubted whether many critics would be able to make much of the book. They will not have a pigeonhole neatly labeled for it. I love that. Yeah. I left something out, and this is something that's really interesting about Father Murray. He was also a language guy, so much so, and maybe as a result of the fact that his grandfather, James Murray, was the founding editor of the Oxford English Dictionary. That's pretty darn impressive, right? So the Oxford English Dictionary, many of you probably already know something about what it is, but it's basically the most like amazing dictionary, definitely in the English language and maybe in the history of the world, right? If you're a language person, it is like, it's just incredible. It's an incredible thing. It's maybe the most like incredible reference work ever. and it's the kind of thing where you can go find any word in the English language that's ever been used, and you can find like what, the history of that word and like where it came from and all of its roots and those sorts of things. So, so that's a really cool notion that this guy is the grandson of the founding editor of the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah.
I also try to remember to link to an article about James Murray, who, you know, Charles, which is, Robert Murray's grandfather. So, but I will read this from Father Murray's obituary on him being a language guy. So he was a theologian and he taught, you know, he was a teacher and he taught a lot on, you know, biblical studies and theological studies and those sorts of things. But it says right here, Robert inherited the family's language gene and love of learning, as well as Latin and Greek, Hebrew and Aramaic. He knew a host of European languages and he became a noted specialist in Syriac. When he gave the first lecture in the brand new post-Vatican II theology course at Heythrop in Oxfordshire, he offered to read the essays of a remarkably international gang of students in whatever language they preferred, and then added sheepishly that he could manage a little Romanian if necessary. Right? So, yeah, this you can kind of understand why maybe Tolkien and Father Murray were maybe good friends, right? Because they both had this like love of language.
Yeah.
And in addition to love of other things as well, right? Obviously sharing a faith as well and a deep appreciation for this faith. So the server at Father Murray's first mass, where he was, you know, the first mass he celebrated as a priest after he was ordained, was J.R.R. Tolkien, right? So pretty cool little connection there as well. And Father Murray delivered a I believe he delivered a homily or maybe even celebrated mass, a mass of remembrance for J.R.R. Tolkien 4 days after he died. So again, this was a lifelong friendship, you know, for both of them. And so that's provides, I think, a necessary context for really more further appreciating. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just some random guy who had written a letter to Tolkien. This was somebody who he already had a rapport with and they were able to communicate and with the background of two people who are already people of understanding, who understand one another and know they share certain things in common. Hey there, fellow Tolkienites. Since you happen to be listening to this podcast, I thought you'd be excited to hear that my books Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture are now available on Audible. Tolkien's Requiem is an exploration of the First Age story of Beren and Lúthien, as found in The Silmarillion. In Tolkien's Requiem, I explore how the story is rooted in Tolkien's own life and the important role it plays in the Middle-earth legendarium. One reader called it a gift to the world, and another said, I wish I'd been able to read Tolkien's Requiem years ago. Tolkien's Overture explores Ainur Lendile, the music of the Ainur, which is the Middle-earth creation story. In Tolkien's Overture, I conduct a close reading of the text as found in the Silmarillion and proceed to unpack the incredible role that music plays in the legends and lives of Middle-earth. One reader called it an excellent book, a critical and thoughtful deep dive into Ainur Lendile. Both books have been recently re-recorded in order to meet professional audiobook standards. Not only are both books available in audiobook format via Audible, but in signed paperback and Kindle as well. To learn more about Tolkien's Requiem, visit tolkiensrequiem.com. To learn more about Tolkien's Overture, visit tolkiensoverture.com. Or just go to tolkienroad.com/books to see them both at once. Seriously, though, I'm really proud of both of these books, and I know that you, like so many others, will enjoy them. So do yourself a favor and check them out. tolkienroad.com/books. And now, back to the show. Let's read the passage from this letter. Greta, do you want to do the honors?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, I know it's a little bit marked up for you, but basically we're just reading that first paragraph right there.
Got it. Okay.
And this is dated 2 December 1953.
Yep. My dear Rob, it was wonderful to get a long letter from you this morning. I'm sorry if casual words of mine have made you labor to criticize my work. But to tell you the truth, though praise, or what is not quite the same thing, and better, expressions of pleasure, is pleasant, I have been cheered specially by what you have said, this time and before, because you are more perceptive, especially in some directions, than anyone else, and have even revealed to me more clearly some things about my work. I think I know exactly what you mean by the order of grace, and of course by your references to Our Lady, upon which all my own small perception of beauty, both in majesty and simplicity, is founded. The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work, unconsciously so at first, but consciously in the revision. That is why I have not put in, or have cut out, practically all references to anything like religion, to cults or practices in the imaginary world. For the religious element is absorbed into the story and the symbolism. However, that is very clumsily put, and sounds more self-important than I feel. For a matter of fact, I have consciously planned very little, and should chiefly be grateful for having been brought up, since I was 8, in a faith that has nourished me and taught me all the little that I know, and that I owe to my mother, who clung to her conversion and died young, largely through the hardships of poverty resulting from it.
All right. So, and that's really the relevant passage from this letter. It's not a super long letter, and the rest of it is interesting, but not directly relevant to what we're discussing. So I want to just go through that and highlight some of the key passages for discussion. The first thing that I want to hit is this idea that the letter Robert Murray had written to Tolkien, Tolkien says, had revealed some things to me more clearly, right? Those are Tolkien's words. So let me read this exact quote. I have been cheered specially by what you have said this time and before, because you are more perceptive, especially in some directions, than anyone else, and have even revealed to me more clearly some things about my work, right? So Father Murray's comments, which we don't have here, I don't know if they're published anywhere. It'd be great to get, I feel like sometimes these letters would be great to get like a additional volume that's like the letters he was responding to, you know, the actual text of the letters he was responding to, but that's a pretty big project, I'm guessing, because you got to go find all those people and then get their permission to publish their letters, right? What does Tolkien mean here, right, when he says that you reveal to me more clearly some things about my work? I think this is important where my mind has been going as I've been preparing for this episode and thinking about a lot of what these words mean. When we went through this History of Middle-earth series, I was struck by the pre- and post-Lord of the Rings writings, right? So, like, the first five volumes are really, like, pre-Lord of the Rings volumes. And then 6 through 9 deal with the writing of the Lord of the Rings, and then 10 through 12 deal with everything Tolkien wrote after writing Lord of the Rings, or a lot of what Tolkien wrote after writing Lord of the Rings. And this all kind of coincides with the release of this bad boy right here, right? The Nature of Middle-earth, right? Which we, of course, discussed recently with its editor, Carl Hostetter, and we plan to have Carl back on the show now that the book is out to talk about a lot of what's in the book as well. It's really good. I've been kind of skimming through it, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. But I think what happened through the process of Tolkien writing Lord of the Rings, it was such a long process, and it was such a period, I think, of creative wrestling for him as he transformed this, like, The Hobbit, you know, then the Hobbit sequel into this thing that really got caught up in the rest of this legendarium. It was almost like he was discovering things as he went along, right? That he was discovering things from his own imaginary world. And that's something we've talked about on our own podcast, on this podcast, many times, right? Is that Tolkien, I think it can be easy for us to come to a person's work and think that everything is done, like, in creating something like a novel, that everything is done in this sort of, like, deliberate, planned, calculated way.
Like, you have, right? An outline, right? And you just follow the outline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reality of it, I think, for many artists, is that you're following a muse, right? You're following, like, intuition. And you don't always know where that intuition is going to lead you. And that's what's so wonderful about, like, Tolkien's own writings, like his kind of narration of the process of writing and his letters and all these things, is they illuminate just how true that was for him. Mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That he, along the ways, was almost like, it was almost like he did not feel like he truly created this world or that he was the originator of it, but he was like discovering these stories after they'd been written. Okay.
It's almost like they were inspired in a very organic, he was written in a very organic way.
Right.
It was almost like flowing through him and he was just putting it on paper.
Yeah. And it's this mystical view of the creative process. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this some, with this idea of all tales may come true. I think I've published that I think I've published the paper and I've actually read the essay on the podcast that I wrote a few years ago, but it's this idea of like this creative mysticism that I think Tolkien favored, right? This view of creativity, mm-hmm. This whole idea of us being sub-creators, right? That we are working on things that already exist in some basic fashion and that they're being, you know, that they are being fed to us. We see this in Mythopoeia, you know, we see this all over the place coming from Tolkien's mind. And I think it's in the process of sharing these things with other people that we begin to see other insights, right? We begin to see like through the eyes of other people what they're seeing in our own works, right? To me, that's the value of the best criticism, right? And the best editing and all these things is mm-hmm. you're like, this is what I see, right? This is what you see because you've been there like right along with it. But as I step back and I'm able to look at it and also know, and the really cool part of this is like know you, this is what I'm seeing in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. It's a different perspective because as the creator or the sub creator rather, you're almost too involved. You're too in it
mm-hmm.
to be able to kind of get see some of those nuances and different things. So when it's shared with someone else who is coming at it from a different perspective, it makes sense that they would see different things.
Especially in the midst of composition, right? When you're laboring just to get the words on the page, mm-hmm. right? That's such a hard part. And sometimes you can go back when you're editing and discover things, and we'll get back mm-hmm. to that idea, right? So that's what I'm kind of taking to mean, like with revealed to me more mm-hmm. clearly, is that mm-hmm. it was through Father Murray's own comments and reflections on what Tolkien had given him from Lord of the Rings that, you know, he's seeing these things, and Tolkien's like, oh, I guess that's there. I'd never really noticed that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Tolkien's discovering these things. Hey there, fellow travelers. If you've made it this far on your journey down the Tolkien road, you take Tolkien and Middle-earth as seriously as we do. That being the case, we want to invite you to join the Tolkien Road community over on Patreon. You've certainly heard us give shout-outs to our patrons before, but that's not the only benefit our patrons receive. Other benefits include patron-only episodes, annual gifts, personalized video greetings from John and Greta, early access to new episodes, free copies of my books Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture, and more. Oh yeah, and just in case you find ads like this a bit annoying, Tolkien Road episodes are ad-free on Patreon. That's right. Not only do you get the latest episodes of the Tolkien Road early on Patreon, but you get them commercial-free as well. Most importantly, your monetary support makes it possible for the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on. The truth is, it takes time and money to create this podcast, and every dollar helps us on our quest to make the Tolkien Road something Tolkien himself would be proud of. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road for more info. Once again, that's patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Now, back to the show. The Order of Grace. So this is apparently something that Murray mentioned in his own comment, in his own comments back to Tolkien, and then Tolkien brings it up. I think I know exactly what you mean by the Order of Grace. And it's like, okay, Tolkien, tell us what exactly it means. What do you think?
I think it's important to note that grace is spelled with a capital G here.
Yes. Oh, very good note. Very good note. In both cases.
Yeah,
right?
in both Roberts and Tolkien's, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? And I do wish we'd had that Tolkien would have elaborated on what he meant by that. But, you know, so we'll just try to, it's two Catholics right here, we'll try to talk about what we think that might mean. And we're open to whatever ideas you all have. I mean, I think in terms of the Order of Grace, I think he's talking about like this, this system of like, I hate using the word system because that makes it sound like robotic, but just this idea that like how God communicates his life to us, right? How God communicates his foundational life to the lives of all of us as contingent beings, right? And the manifold ways in which he does that. So within the Catholic system, right, within the Catholic theological system, grace comes to us via... what's the first thing you think of when you think of grace coming to us, Greta? I'll just ask you. Putting you on
sacraments.
The spot. The sacraments, right?
Yeah.
So the sacraments. So the Eucharist, baptism, confirmation, confession, and then anointing of the sick through marriage, and through holy orders, right? So those are like the big seven ways that through which grace comes to you, all right? I've often thought of Lord of the Rings as being sacramental, and so that doesn't necessarily mean that there are sacraments everywhere, right? Like with a capital S. But there's also these things that are like sacramentals, right? Which are just various ways in which grace can be communicated to us in particular instances that aren't necessarily like the standard sacraments themselves, but, you know, through certain prayers, through praying the rosary, through these ways of interacting with the life of God, mm-hmm. right? As it's mm-hmm. being poured out upon you. And so this order of grace, I think there's something to it about like assistance, supernatural life coming to you in these ways that are sort of hidden, that aren't necessarily like apparent right on the face, but take some thinking about, take some realizing to see. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Greta, what do you do with that? What do you do with the order of grace?
I think where my brain went, again, you know, I was thinking of the sacraments and sacramentals and things like that. And I guess something that popped into my brain was, I think you're spot on. Like it's the way that God communicates his love and his life to us in our everyday life. And I think that looks different for every person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something that that I've begun to pay more attention to since I've been Catholic is, you know, kind of like a little slang term, if you will, like these God winks, mm-hmm. right? Like just these little things that are totally easy to overlook and not mm-hmm. even pay attention to. But, you know, when you're kind of tuned in, or if you're struggling with something specific, you've been praying about something and you're looking for these things, like they're everywhere. And it can be something as little as getting like a rock star parking spot at like an overcrowded, you know, whatever. Or it could just be like, you know, just little things that go right, that, you know, like hitting every green light on the way to work when you're running late, like just little things like that. But specifically with like when it comes to Lord of the Rings, I just feel like there's tons of those little God winks, if you will, mm-hmm. in them. Just these little moments where things could have just gone so terribly, but they don't because of some kind of divine intervention.
I always think, you know, we bring up God winks, and there's one, and I think I've probably mentioned it on this podcast in the past, but there's one that's relevant to this podcast, and that was the time that I'll just cut this very short. It was the time that I, right after I had finished writing Tolkien's Requiem about the story of Beren and Luthien being Tenuviel, that I met my friend Tenuviel, like literally like within like a week or two, right, after deciding to publish that book, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was, it's one of these things where it's like, it could just be a random coincidence, but it sure does feel like somebody's, mm-hmm. you know, somebody saying, hey, I'm here, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm watching out for you, right?
Yeah.
And
to confirm that you're on the right path, too.
And especially that was a point in my life when I just lost my job. I had just gotten laid off. And, you know, you're like, you're going through this like real existential wrestling. And to receive something like that is a little like admonishment to have faith, right? And mm-hmm. trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge topic.
It is huge.
I was thinking for a second about the order of grace as being something like salvation history as well. So within Catholicism, we'll talk about like viewing history and through this lens of salvation history, right? What is the story of God coming to humanity to bring humanity out of its sin and out of death, right? And into the fullness of life, right? And of course, Tolkien did talk about this a lot, mm-hmm. right? He talked about it on fairy stories when he talked about viewing all of history as through the lens of the incarnation and the resurrection, right? So, and I think that's pretty key for understanding like where Tolkien maybe went from here. Okay. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say though? We kind of overlapped in trying to say something.
Oh, I don't
That's all right. It'll come back to you.
I guess kind of what I was thinking about was, well, I don't know, maybe this is a good segue because the next thing I have on the list is Our Lady.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's segue into that.
I was just thinking about with regards to this order of grace, specifically with regards to Lord of the Rings, I was thinking about Galadriel
mm-hmm.
and all the gifts she gives them.
Yes.
When she's leaving or when they're leaving, you know, to continue the journey, and just how, you know, I think that's kind of, well, I think we got a lot going on there, but we think about, especially if Galadriel is representative of Our Lady or, you know, a Marian type figure, you have that intercession of the saints going on there. And then you also have just the things that she gives them, right? Are tools, they're physical tools, but they like end up saving their lives on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that can also be part of that order of grace,
right?
As well. Like when you're talking about sacramentals, I think we could even call those things that Galadriel gives them. Those could be sacramentals in a way.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up that idea of gifts, right? Because I think that's also key to understanding grace, mm-hmm. is this idea of gifts being given. It's not limited just to the big seven sacraments. It's that's kind of the main and primary means and the common means through which Christians experience grace. But gifts, the gifts of God's grace can be given in any number of additional ways beyond mm-hmm. that, right? Mm-hmm. It's not limited to just those things,
right?
Necessarily.
Right.
And I think we've talked, you know, a good bit about Our Lady and, on different episodes. And I think, you know, we definitely talked about Galadriel on an episode a while back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the important thing to highlight here is what he says, references to Our Lady, upon which all my own small perception of beauty, both in majesty and simplicity, is founded, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty big, right? To say that, like, it's upon Our Lady who all of my appreciation of beauty, both in majesty and simplicity, is founded, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
simple beauty and majestic beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all his perception of beauty, right? I mean, that's pretty huge, for especially for a work that is so mm-hmm. beautiful and mm-hmm. and strikes so many people as beautiful in so many various ways, right? And that says just a whole lot again right there, right? I mean, we could go on for a while about exactly what that means. So what this makes me think of is both the simplicity of like the hobbits and their ordinary heroism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just the heroism of saying yes to what you've been called to do, right? And with Catholics, we always point back to the Annunciation, right? Where Mary mm-hmm. just says yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Incarnation, which is the most important event in salvation history, right? That happens, just like Frodo says, I'll take the ring.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know where I'm going any more than Mary knew where she was going, mm-hmm. right? With all this, it's just like, I'll take the ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
the fiat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, you've got the majesty. You've got the majesty of somebody like Galadriel, right? You've got the majesty of so many different high figures within the story. Aragorn,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Somebody who is, you know, who is this mighty, destined to be this mighty king, just like in the Catholic system, Mary is destined to be the mightiest queen, right? The mightiest monarch, you know, of heaven, right?
Mm-hmm.
The queen mother, right? And all of it. So I think that's a little taste of what Tolkien means by that it runs on this incredible spectrum, right? And Our Lady, all of the images of Our Lady, right? Mary, you know, you just walk into any Catholic church and you're going to see all this iconography, right? You're going to see the simple handmaiden, but you're also going to see the queen, right? And the idea is that different points in her story, right? Different points in the story of Our Lady. All right. So here's the chief thing we're considering. So The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work, unconsciously so at first, but consciously in the revision. All right, let's deal with the first part of that. And I mean, he just says it right out, right? Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work. But it's not like he's all over the place saying that everywhere, right? And if that's the only thing that you pay any attention to, if you get hung up on that, whether it's somebody who's trying to say, look, Tolkien said it himself, Lord of the Rings is fundamentally religious and Catholic. Deal with that, atheists and non-Cat. Like, you're missing the point, right? But on the flip side, if you let yourself get hung up on that because you think, well, I guess I can't appreciate it if it's that, right? Then you're also missing the point, okay? You have to remember, again, the context that he's talking to Father Murray, right? He's talking to a fellow Catholic. He's talking to, and this is interesting, one of the courses that Father Murray actually taught was fundamental theology, right? Mm. And what does that word fundamental mean? It especially trips people up in a context when you're talking about religion, because we think of fundamentalism, right? Mm. And like it being this like very rigid, you know, like kind of constrained way of thinking. People use fundamentalism as a like, it's pretty much a pejorative now, right? It's something that's like meant to immediately turn you off to something, right? When you speak of somebody or some idea as a fundamentalist. Right. But it probably wasn't such a bad word back in that day. And I don't think Tolkien would have applied the label as we apply it now. Right. What that word simply means is foundational. It means first things. Right. It means at the root. Right. So we need to understand it in that context, because I think that's what he means. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. He's not saying that it's all over the place and that I've put in all these cheesy references that, you know, I don't mean to put down what anybody likes, but it's like, you know, I think about a lot of like Christian pop music, right? And it's like, it sounds like normal pop music in a lot of cases, but it's got like references to Jesus in it. And that's not what he's talking about here. Okay. What he's talking about is the things that underlie all of it, right? The ideas, the philosophies, the perceptions that underlie all of it, right? The metaphysic of it, getting down into the deepness of it, okay? And what's really going on beneath the surface.
The undercurrents.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he goes on, and so he says it's both religious and Catholic, right? So religious, we talked about this idea of what is religion, and it's this thing that binds. It's this thing that binds people together, okay? And then Catholic, right? So he's using capital C. We can be pretty confident he's referring to a pretty strict sense of Catholic here in terms of his own Catholic faith, okay? And he goes on to say, unconsciously at first and consciously in the revision. So this gets back to what we were talking about towards the beginning, that Father Murray's letter had revealed to Tolkien some things more clearly. And I think that's because as we write, as we create initially the first drafts of things, we don't always see what's going on, especially if we're following intuition, if we're following sort of this muse, right? And it takes some time to go back and edit our own work, and so have other people look at our work, and then we edit it too, right? I think of just writing songs. I think of even creating this podcast sometimes. I have an idea for doing something, and it's not until I kind of get my notes down initially that I'm like, okay, I don't need to talk about this. This is the heart of what I'm trying to get at, right? This is the fundamental thing I'm trying to get at, okay? Or the fundamental things. So I think that's where he's going with unconsciously at first and then consciously in the revision, right? It was easier for him to see these things that made Lord of the Rings fundamentally a religious and Catholic work when he was going back and revising and editing it, right? Mm-hmm. Which he obviously spent a long time doing as well, okay? He was discovering all these things, all these connections that he wasn't able to see in the initial drafting. And so it's the same thing for me when I've written many songs. Like, I'll start off with an idea. Maybe it's a guitar riff or just a line or a melody like that just comes to mind. And I'll try for a long time to craft something around this. I'm not even really sure what it's about. I'm just like, I just like this. going to kind of follow it and see where it goes. And sometimes I'll end up like cutting away, you know, writing tons of lyrics, having a song that's 9 minutes long, and I'll edit it down and I'll get rid of a bunch of lyrics, and I'll just get rid all the way to like one line and then build the song again around that one line. And it's like, that's what it was. That, and you just know when you get there, you're like, that's it. And you feel like, I didn't just, like, you feel proud because, you know, you created this thing and it came through your own hands, but you're like, but for some reason, I feel like I can't take all the credit for it. You know, it's like, there was, I had to discover it, right? Mm-hmm. I had to discover this thing that was there. And I think that applies in all sorts of artistic settings. So unconsciously at first, consciously in the revision. Greta, does that make mm-hmm. sense to you? Like, oh, yeah. Kind of how I'm putting that? Okay.
Totally.
All right.
Totally,
cool.
Yeah.
He goes on to say he talks about cutting all references, like explicit references to religion, within the story. And I think this is because he realized it was fundamentally religious and Catholic. And I did find this really interesting. I was like, were there actually like references to religious things and like religious ideas within the first draft of the story? It's not something I'm familiar with enough of the early versions of Lord of the Rings to know well, but it almost sounded like he did. It almost sounded like, you know, he had to go back and cut out a lot of these things because he's like, that doesn't need to be there, right? So, you know, we're not going to go into like whether that's true or not, but...
Well, that's interesting because he says, you know, consciously in the revision. So mm-hmm. you would think that those things would have stayed, or maybe he would have even added some stuff. But instead he says he cut it out.
Well, what he says is the religious element is absorbed into the story and the symbolism.
Hmm.
Right? So
he didn't want it to be in your face. Like, he didn't want it to be like... Like, he wanted people to be able to kind of discover it for themselves.
Yeah, and I just think of, like, you know, we know that there was actual things within Middle Earth because we just did an episode on the religion of Numenor, right? That they actually had a religion. We can even see in the Silmarillion, like, references to certain things, the practice of the Valar. There's even notes just, like, with the elves and their, you know, hymn to Elbereth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just these different interactions that strike us as having sort of a religious nature to them, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So, but, you know, he says he cut all references and, you know, so we don't have those things, but because they are absorbed into the story and the symbolism, which of course to me sounds, and probably to most people sounds an awful lot like allegory, but so it's like, really, Tolkien, there was an allegory going on? But again, I think, you know, he's saying like there's not this one-to-one correspondence necessarily.
Right. That's what I would say too.
Yeah.
That it's not, you know, it's not super obvious, right? Like,
right.
It's more kind of beneath the surface
mm-hmm.
and it's there, and it's inspiring everything that's happening, but it's not like super obvious.
Right.
You know, like if you're not looking for it, maybe you wouldn't find it kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, lastly, you know, he talks about this being the faith that nourished him and taught him, right, throughout the course of his life. And he, of course, makes reference to his mother. This is all a very personal thing, you know, for Tolkien. And it's so personal that he wants to, you know, that he finds it. It's like despite himself, right? He finds it within his writings despite himself, right?
Yep.
It mm-hmm. just can't help but work itself into what he's doing.
And it's been a part of his life since he was 8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's basically, it's something that's been a part of him for mm-hmm. so long.
Yeah.
And he was raised by a priest after his mom passed.
Of course.
So, I mean, I don't know how he could have written something that didn't have at least a little bit of religion or Catholicism in it.
Absolutely.
And especially seeing, I wonder too, you know, since he mentioned his mother, if this was almost in a way a tribute to her.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing basically the sacrifice that she made to become Catholic.
Yeah.
He basically said that he kind of basically refers to her as a martyr.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
and more than one place. Yeah.
Yeah.
And other letters.
I mean,
and
here
well.
It's a little more you know, I mean, he just basically says, you know, that in large part she died young because she was Catholic, because of the poverty it forced her into.
Right.
So, you know, it almost seems like he'd be doing her a disservice to not, you know, if he were to do anything different with his, you know, with that, with his masterpiece.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it, so what I'm kind of putting this all together to say, and this is something we'll explore further next time. So in modern, in like contemporary terms, people have started using this term speculative fiction to discuss things like science fiction and fantasy. It's kind of an all-encompassing term for, you know, fiction that obviously doesn't take place within our own reality. And I would then go on to say that what Tolkien was doing with his work, great work of speculative fiction here, was for the rest of his life, he was engaging in speculative metaphysics, right? So we have frustratingly little to go on here in terms of Tolkien's own direct words about what he means, but he admits, and he admits it's all rather clumsily put, but what I feel like I've discovered through contemplating this, as well as how it applies to all of Tolkien's works and views, is that Tolkien was himself just discovering the religious nature of it all, right? This was the crowning achievement of Middle Earth, and now he's going back for the rest of his life, and like, you know, he wants to put the Silmarillion out, obviously, but he's trying to kind of like put it all together now, right? Like, what is going on? And Tolkien was just the kind of person that it was like he had to have it figured out, right? He had to have it all figured out. We see that in these volumes of the History of Middle Earth that come after Lord of the Rings, and we see that in the Nature of Middle Earth. You know, that he's, and it's not just the supernatural questions he's trying to work out, but he's trying to work out a lot of natural level questions as well. But you know, there's a lot of evidence to kind of support this idea that was one of the chief things that was on his mind and heart for the rest of his life after this, was just going in and discovering all these things that he was, and discovering more deeply all these things he was starting to discover, and answering some of the harder questions about how certain things worked. So speculative fiction leads to speculative metaphysics, i.e. philosophizing about the first or fundamental principles of reality. And I believe after considering Tolkien's writings that came after Lord of the Rings, that this is what so much of his life was absorbed with, discovering just what he himself detected through Murray's letter. All right, next time we're going to look at some of the evidence for this, including some of the newest Tolkien book, The Nature of Middle Earth. So, which nice. Is out now, so you can go pick up your copy. I'll link to it in the show notes. So, Greta, how does all that sound to you?
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds really good.
I think this is I'm so intrigued by this topic, and I hope again for all of you, whatever your views on religion, on Catholicism are, that this is at least an interesting topic to you because of what Tolkien had to say about it, right? And that we can all agree that if we want to appreciate more deeply Tolkien's works, it's good to appreciate, to try to discover what he meant by these things, right? And I think for most of us, religious, non-religious, Catholic, non-Catholic, it's good stuff, right? It's good stuff to discover and be able to appreciate on a deeper level what he was doing.
Absolutely. I'm not going to say it doesn't make my brain hurt a little bit, because it kind of does, but in a good way.
Well, it makes my brain hurt. And honestly, I think it made Tolkien's brain hurt too. Like trying to put this all into words, right? Because it's not just on the nose, but metaphysics never is. Like deep philosophy never is, right? It always kind of eludes you to some degree, but that's, you know, for some people, that's the beauty of it. Is continually trying to get at it and finding new ways of expressing it.
Yeah. So. Yep. I agree.
All right. So, y'all, that's all we have for this week. Unfortunately, don't have time to get to any correspondence this week, but we would love to hear from you nevertheless, and hopefully we will on the next episode. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. All right. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Andrew T.,
John R.,
Ms. Anonymous,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Shannon S.,
Brian O.,
Emilio P.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
James L.,
Chris L.,
Chuck F.,
Asia V.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C.,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D.,
Eric S.,
Joey S.,
Eric B.,
Johanna T.,
Mike M.,
Robert H.,
Paul D.,
Julia,
and Werty.
as well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in September, Johanna T.
Dustin Q.
And Robert S.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. And thank you to everyone who's listening or watching us on YouTube, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.